the 3-1 pitch. Swung on and blasted. Deep right center. Away, back and gone. Bradley Zimmer with a grand slam. Oh, did he put a charge into it. Swung on, hammered to deep center field. Zimmer near the wall, leaps, made the catch, crashed into the wall, fell to the track, gets up and shows he hung on. He's done it again. Oh, what a play by Zimmer. And the Indians have a chance for a walk-off win. The pitch to Encarnacion. A swing and a drive to deep left center. Away, back, and gone. A game-winning grand slam to left center for Edwin Encarnacion. And a mobbing at home plate.
He's going to get killed.
Okay.
Is he just boxing?
Okay.
I got mad because I thought they were going to use MMA rules against boxers because that's what it's all about. Can the boxer beat the MMA guy? Conor put his dumb ass in a position where he's going to get knocked out. Cause this guy's been doing this all his life since he was a little baby. And McConnor can't kick or grab and stuff. He's not going to stand much of a chance. McGregor took the biggest sucker rules in the history of boxing.
So if LeBron tells you, hey, you get me enough veteran help that we think we got a shot against Golden State, like I'm all in to come back here for multiple years, then that changes it. If you think there's a good chance LeBron leaves, or at least some chance LeBron leaves, which is the operating assumption right now, then the number one priority becomes somewhere in this trade, we got to get a blue chip 22 and under player that can carry us forward into whatever our next era is. Obviously, I mean, they want everything, right? They want the veterans, they want the blue chip, or they want a pick. But, you know, every offer sort of lands somewhere on each of those individual scales. And I think right now, priority number one is that blue chip 22, 23 and under guy.
There are some moments when a professional athlete literally tempts you to go nuclear on them. And I stand here before you today, right in that zone when it comes to LeBron James. Ladies and gentlemen, LeBron James sent out a tweet about me responding to Slam Magazine, talking about not facts, people. Boo, get another source. It's talking about me. It's talking about what I reported. And what I reported was that if LeBron James was in front of Kyrie Irving, I was told, quote, he would be tempted to whoop his ass. That's what was told to me. I did not speculate. I did not put that out there. It was told to me, verbatim. In that man, he's not going to hit Kyrie. He's not going to get into a fight with Kyrie. It wasn't meant to be taken literally. It was meant to highlight his level of frustration with what he perceives to be something that Kyrie Irving is doing in his eyes, which is to say he believes that Kyrie Irving, who is a big-time talent, and as far as I'm concerned, a superstar in his own right, who is a champion, wants to leave, and that should have been that, rather than Kyrie Irving trying to make his departure about LeBron James because it makes LeBron James look bad, and LeBron James feels betrayed.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh my goodness, are we loaded up this afternoon for an extravaganza? Thank you for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Toledo's sports leader. We seriously have so much to talk about today. And yes, thank you. Thank you to our studio audience. Appreciate you being here. My goodness, we really have a lot of directions to go. We're going to save a lot of the Kyrie Irving trade talk for the second hour of the show today. Okay? And the only reason for that is we're going to talk to Dennis Mantiloff after we hear from Dan Gilbert. Cushlin, a long-awaited update on all things going on with the tumultuous offseason of the defending Eastern Conference champion, Cleveland Cavaliers. A press conference supposed to be held at 4 o'clock today with Dan Gilbert. And very interested to see what the owner says after he essentially ran the GM that was a favorite of LeBron James, talking about Griffin out of town. Now he has been told by Kyrie Irving, his second-best player, that he wants out of town. LeBron James said to be very upset by that in a bit of a war of words now, and expected by some after his 2017-18 season to get out of town, what the hell is going on in that town as it pertains to the defending champion, defending Eastern Conference champion Cavaliers. Supposed to have a press conference at 4 o'clock today from Dan Gilbert. It's about doggone time he speaks, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, at this point, then, once that's done, then the only person we kind of have to hear from, as we were talking a little bit about yesterday, is Kyrie himself.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm very interested to see what he has to say. By the way, he's doing a little trolling. I don't know if you saw it, but in Instagram, I mean, there's...
Gosh, who isn't these days?
This is really, really, really interesting, though. Kyrie is responding, I think, to a diss 4 days ago from LeBron, Troll King LeBron, who dropped a Kyrie diss on Instagram in which he's basically just sitting there and kind of slow jamming to a song that is kind of interesting, I think most people would agree, by LeBron James, which we'll talk about in a bit. Well, just today I saw on a TV show an Instagram of Kyrie Irving, and he is on his way back from China, where he did his big old marketing tour with Nike, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which we all knew about, and that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. So he's on his way back from that, and he tweets a picture of himself, either in the air or driving. I couldn't quite tell, but he's looking straight ahead, and the camera's down low, like kind of in his lap, sort of, and it's up on him as he is slow jamming and singing a song. What song is he singing? He's singing, "I'm coming home, I'm coming home." The song that became infamous for LeBron James when he announced he was coming back from Miami to Cleveland 3 years ago. And it can be taken one of two ways. What? I'm coming home. I was in China. That's all. Or it can be mocking LeBron James, really furthering the divide between those two guys. Add those things to the fact that Stephen A. Smith, and you just heard some of that, saying his sources said LeBron James wanted to beat Kyrie's ass, even though Stephen A. Smith says he didn't take it literally like he would fight, but it's just, I'm not happy. It's like, man, if that dude was here, I'd kick his ass. And we say that all the time. We say that all the time. I'll kill you, man. You're not going to kill somebody, man, but I'll kill you for that. Means I'm not happy about that,
right.
With you about that. So... in my estimation, all is broken. Ain't no rehabbing that situation, but I'm very interested to see what the Cavaliers owner, Dan Gilbert, says about that today at 4 o'clock. So we decided to push Dennis Manilov, who we were going to talk about, that walk-off home run and a couple of other things out there in Cleveland right now. We were going to do that in the 3 o'clock hour. We said, you know what, let's wait and react to the Dan Gilbert presser rather than kind of predict it and talk about what could be going on. We're going to kind of talk about what really is going on after we hear him. So looking forward to that part of the conversation. By the way, Dan Gilbert making news not just in Cleveland to our east, Jim Cushlin, but in Detroit to the north of the state line with a controversial downtown sign. Did you follow this, Jim?
I saw this the other day, yeah.
It's a billboard, apparently, downtown. It was a Facebook post of a billboard, essentially, I guess. And it was posted by Dan Gilbert, who, of course, made his billions in Detroit. And, you know, that's the home of the Quicken Loans and all the rest. And, of course, his long association with the D before, buying the Cavaliers out in the C, the CLE. How about that, the D and the CLE? Anywho, he is still, of course, very heavily involved in civics situations in Detroit. And he posted a picture on Facebook with the caption, "See Detroit like we do." And it's positive things. You know, I mean, let's be honest. Detroit doesn't have the best reputation nationally, yes?
Yeah.
Cleveland went through that and is, I think, experiencing a bit of a renaissance now. You know, they had an NBA championship. They had a huge parade, wildly successful. They hosted a major party's national convention last summer. They have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They went to the World Series last year. They've kind of had a bit of a renaissance, but they know what it's like to be called the mistake on the lake and all of the national jokes. Well, a lot of those things still apply to Detroit. It's a negative image. It's high crime. It's high poverty. And Detroit is, low in the on the scale of positive things right about now. I think a lot of people would agree. Well, so this is a positive marketing message they were trying to send, which was Seed Detroit like we do. It's a Bedrock Development commercial, okay? And so it shows instead of crime and poverty and closed down buildings and blight and all that sort of thing, it shows people. You know, somebody's holding books, you know, as if they're going to college there, which is, of course, you know, Detroit has tons of places for in the Detroit metro area, tons of wonderful universities and colleges. Somebody's standing there taking selfies. Other people are having a party. You know, just to wonder, somebody's standing up tall playing the trumpet, the music scene. It's all wonderful. It's really a positive message about Detroit, right? The problem is all of the people that I just described to you in that billboard slash poster, they're all white. See Detroit like we do. All white. That's a little bit difficult for people to comprehend, considering the fact that U.S. Census data in 2010, the most recent full census that we have, shows that Detroit is 82% black. The city of Detroit proper is 82% black, and they're doing a Seed Detroit Like We Do campaign with everybody being white. Dan Gilbert had to apologize for that. This is from the Free Press. A Sunday night Facebook post signed by billionaire businessman Dan Gilbert announced that his organization, quote, screwed up badly, end quote, when posting a downtown sign that said Seed Detroit Like We Do. Filling windows along the ground level of the Vinton building, the sign with the Bedrock real estate company's insignia was a photograph of nearly all white people. U.S. Census data in 2010 showed the city to be more than 82% black. Although, this is a quote, although not intended to create the kind of feelings it did, the slogan slash statement we used on these graphics was tone deaf, in poor taste, and does not reflect a single value of philosophy that we stand for at Bedrock Development and our entire family of companies, end quote, according to the Post. Gilbert said in the Post that the dumb campaign slogan has been killed. He also posted images of additional panels that reflects the population of the city that we do business in and also reflects the diversity among our own workforce in Detroit, end quote. Also according to the Post, Gilbert owns dozens of buildings in downtown Detroit, the Vinton building at the corner of Woodward and Congress being one of them. The first panel was installed Friday, but Gilbert said it was removed Saturday as soon as they realized that the partial installation would completely distort our vision and our finished product. So just one of those really, really bizarre situations where I don't think they intended any harm, but the fact that they didn't intend any harm isn't going to placate people who felt very, very much harmed. What do you mean? You see positive aspects of Detroit only when you see white people? Is that what that is trying to say? It is in poor taste. It is a very bad message, and Dan Gilbert's got that to deal with now. I got to tell you, Jim, I don't know. It takes a special kind of billionaire to mess up and be viewed negatively in two different big cities in the Midwest.
Yeah, good call on that last part.
And, at the same time.
Right. Yeah, no doubt about it. But, you know, thinking of that story, because it first came out, you know, as you mentioned, it was Friday and into Saturday of last weekend.
Yeah.
And so some of the fallout was coming out, you know, earlier in this weekend.
Right.
You know, it's – to me, I'm not looking at this as like one of those PC or anything, but it's like – really, guys? You know, who's on your marketing team? You know,
yeah.
Who drops the ball, you know, on that one and not crossing all the T's and dotting all
well,
the
that's,
I's,
see,
so to
that,
speak.
That's the thing. It's not just who's on it, because it's never one person.
Right.
Okay? If you've ever been, you know, at any association with these kinds of public marketing type of organizations for big cities, like, you know, out in Cleveland, they have something called the DTA, which is the downtown, DCA, Downtown Cleveland Alliance, I think it is, maybe. But there's another group called Positively Cleveland, and they work with the city to promote the image and so on and so forth. These are big teams of people.
Yeah.
And
oh,
I
yeah.
have no doubt that the ones in Detroit are big teams of people as well. And in Toledo, downtown Toledo, the same thing. There are teams of people that decide on imaging and marketing and, you know, even in states, of course, you know, the whole Pure Michigan campaign that everybody loves. My wife and daughter want to go to Michigan so freaking bad because of those commercials. You hear those all the time,
oh, yeah.
The Pure Michigan commercials, and they're like, oh, I want to go there so bad because they love the commercials. It's hilarious. Interestingly enough, the first college visit my daughter took a few weeks ago when I took a day off was to a school in Michigan.
All right, there you go.
But anyway. There are teams of people, so Jim, for them to, and I know we're getting off into the weeds here a little bit, but for them to have this campaign see the light of day it had to get by a whole room full of people surrounding a big conference table with a big-ass whiteboard or, computer screen with a PowerPoint presentation and saying, here's the slogan, see Detroit like we do. And somebody probably is like, that's got possibilities. And the whole team is probably nodding off. Yeah, we see positive things here. We see fun here. We see education here. We see downtown vibrancy here. That's a nice idea. Let's see some of the graphics. And then they lay them out on this big giant screen in this big conference room. And they look and say, yeah, I like it. Oh, look at the trumpet guy. Oh, look at those students over there. Oh, look at the partiers over there. Look at the selfies with the city backdrop or city skyline in the backdrop. I like it. It had to get signed off and checked, initialed probably, by, you know, half a dozen people in management positions and maybe more than that, just in team development positions.
Right.
And not one of them looked and said, hey, wait a second. Why is everybody here white? Nobody? Really? Nobody noticed that a city that is very, very definitely diverse, if not flat out over, the numbers are overwhelmingly on the side of a black population, according to the census, that it's a much higher number of African Americans in Detroit. They're saying, see Detroit as we do with a bunch of white dudes, and everybody signed? Everybody initialed and said, go. Print it. Let's run that. How stupid do you have to be?
Yeah, that's the thing that I, you
it's
know.
It's not
that,
just Gilbert is my point. He's right. Got to apologize. But all of his team said, yeah, we're with you, boss. Looks good. We don't need to represent black people, Latino people, or anybody else that might be living in the city of Detroit. Let's just put a bunch of white people having fun there and saying, see Detroit like we do. We don't see minorities. That's just so tone deaf, so tone. I guess in this case it would be tone blind. That's not a thing, but you understand the point.
Right, yeah. That's why, and for me, that's why I did say plural a few minutes ago, who's in these rooms, you know, deciding this? Because this isn't the first PR fail, and it obviously won't be the last, and not just here, but anywhere. And it's when these things come up, as we're saying, and you're saying, Bob, it makes you – how does this get past – everyone without somebody, you know, is being like, hey, you know, I don't know necessarily about this part of it. See, look here, blah, 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 blah. Where was that guy? You know, where was that guy in the whole thing? And then days later, as it's all filtering out and people have had their say, I just look back at it and kind of laugh at the just idiocy sometimes.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it reminds me of the meme. You know, you had one job. You had one job, not offend a vast majority of your population and look as though you were featuring just one race on your great Detroit sign. You had one job. Don't offend everybody. And fail. So anyway, all of that is about Dan Gilbert managing to tick off people in two different cities at one time. where his two biggest business cities, one where he's got dozens of buildings and business ventures in Detroit, and the other one where he owns the Cleveland Cavaliers and a number of other properties, including the casino in Cleveland. And, yeah, nobody likes him. The reason, of course, in Cleveland is the Cavaliers' mess, so he's supposed to address the media coming up at 4 o'clock, and we'll talk more about that with Maniloff after about 4:35 or so. He said he'll pull himself away from the press conference to talk to us about the most important things that are discussed.
Which will be early, of course, in the press conference, obviously.
Say again?
And those most important things that we'll discuss with Maniloff will probably happen early in the press conference, of course.
You're right. The only thing that could be the monkey in the wrench here, the fly in the ointment, the chink in the armor, is the prospect of it not getting off on time. You know how these things go?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we're starting at 4 o'clock, and it's 4:20, and we're like, oh, well, we're still waiting to start. And by the time, you know, Maniloff comes on, they've been talking 5 minutes only.
Right.
So, well, you know, we'll do the best we can, and I'm looking forward to that conversation. All right, so many other things in that montage and at the top of the news cycle today, but can I just do this again because you played it and because it happened last night?
Okay.
I can't get enough of this.
A swing and a drive to deep left center, away, back, and gone. A game-winning grand slam to left center.
A pair of grand slams for the first place Indians yesterday in their win over the Angels. Bradley Zimmer got one early. And Edwin Encarnacion got the big one late in 11, a walk-off grand slam. Simply incredible. Congratulations to them, and congratulations to Edwin Encarnacion, who seems to be back out of his, again, another power slump. You know, he had a very bad slump to start the season, then got crazy hot, then kind of fell off again the last three-plus weeks, and now he seems to be hot again and is starting to drive the baseball. I told you something, Jim, off the air.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it on the air. I'm really mad that this happened. Who's got iPhones? Maybe somebody can help me. I used to have an Android-based phone, right?
Right, okay.
And it was about a few years ago. I've been on iPhone for a while now. But I used to have an Android-based smartphone, and they make it a lot easier to upload your own ringtones, whether it be music or whether it be sound effects or whatever. And now that I have iPhone, I can't figure out how to do it. I think there's an app you can try to use, but it's really cumbersome and difficult, and I've never figured it out, which is bad since I'm in the radio industry and I should be able to handle, you know, editing a little sound and uploading it, but I couldn't. This used to be my ringtone, and it was just all kind of cool. It's Tom Hamilton, the voice of the Indians, making the calls, and you get right off of YouTube. This used to be my ringtone, and I don't care if I'm out to dinner with the wife. If I am in, well, I turn my phone off in the movies. I'm not an idiot. But if I'm in any public place, walking down the street, you know, in an elevator, when my phone rang, everybody around me heard, you know, in the middle of dead silence, suddenly,
a swing and a drive to deep left center, away, back and gone.
That was my ringtone.
Outstanding, by the way.
And I had it looped. And I had it looped, so you can hear two of those, and then a pause for the next ring, and then we hear it again. And you know what? The truth is, Jim, I swear to God, that could have been the exact same cut from a few years ago, because that's how Hammy does those kinds of calls.
Yeah, he does.
He changes it up. Like the first inning one, which you played, was a swing and a blast. This one is a swing and a drive. And another one, oh, no, I take it back now. Now that I'm thinking back to my old one, I'm almost hearing it in my head. Jim, I think it was swung on and belted. That's another one of his classics. Swung on and belted to deep left, way back and gone. I can't even try to do it. But it's just one of those fun kind of things. If anybody has an iPhone or knows how I can upload that to become my ringtone again, please call me, 866-240-1065. I'm not even kidding about that.
That is outstanding,
okay.
By the way.
It is outstanding.
I love every part of that story.
The sad part about that story, Jim, is I don't have it anymore.
Right.
Now I've got the standard whatever iPhone ringtone is. I think it's Blues or something with the stupid ring that I've got, because I can't do the customized audio anymore. But I would love, and to be truthful, you know, even though it's a little bit unprofessional, doing radio shows, even then, I would keep my phone on. I'd keep my phone on, and I'd be doing a show, and in the background, people listening would just hear,
a swing and a drive to deep left center.
And they know I was taking a phone call, but I wouldn't take the call, but it's just because it was fun and because it was cool. And I need to be able to do that again. Somebody help me, seriously. Okay, let's see. What do I want to do here? I want to give you our stat of the day. And in fact, it's not just any stat of the day, Kush. It's a wild stat.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day. Brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
That's not loud enough to be wild, however. That needs to be louder, that wild intro. But I will be loud as I give you the actual wild stat of the day, which comes from Yankee Stadium, where the recently acquired Todd Frazier, against his old team, the Reds, of course, grounded into your typical 6-3-5-4 triple play, right? Triple play. Well, except that triple plays aren't typical. And even if you have a triple play, this one is certainly not typical, because the third out was a runner caught in a rundown. But what really isn't typical is the fact that a run scored on that play. That's the first time, and this is your wild stat, that a run has scored on a triple play since 2006, and just the seventh time it has happened since 1930. That is an amazingly wild stat. I have to tell you, Kush, when I first saw it, and when you gave me the detailed history on this, I was surprised it was 2006.
Yeah,
I would have thought this would have been like 1907 when Booger McGee scored on a triple play.
Which is kind of what our stat was yesterday with the guys hitting 500 a month. You had two guys since 2000. Everybody else was like in the 1920s.
Right, exactly. I was expecting that. I wasn't expecting a 2006. That's crazy. A run scores on a triple play. It's just,
And of course, everything has to line. Has to line up perfectly. The reason the run scores is because the run gets home before the third out. Because
right.
The third out was caused in a rundown, so you can't make the continuous kind of call or whatnot. So you get three outs, but I guess you scored a run. Okay.
Yeah, and you know what? I didn't see the play, Jim, so I didn't see that highlight. Did you?
Yes, it was basically Todd Frazier's up, and obviously bases are loaded,
nobody
out.
I don't need all the details, but I wanted this part of the detail. Did the runner who got caught in a rundown know that's what he's doing? He's got a guy on his way home, and if he can just stay alive for a few seconds here, we can get a run out of this, even though I'm dead to rights. Was it an intentionally smart base-running move to get caught in that rundown, knowing that there was a runner going home?
When I viewed this a couple times earlier today, it did not seem like it, because the rundown was between second and third.
Okay.
Is where the rundown happened. The ground ball went right to the shortstop playing close to the bag, so quickly stepped on second, threw to first, and the first baseman, in this case would be Votto for the Reds, saw the guy still trying to head to third, guns it over there, and the rundown starts.
I'd be willing to bet he knew exactly that. Because if the guy who was caught in the rundown?
I'd have to triple check.
Doesn't matter. But whoever it was saw that somebody was on their way home and probably slammed on the brakes and said, "All I got to do is go back and forth here for a second or two, and we'll score that run before I get tagged out." He probably did, because it was in front of him, second to third rundown, and then obviously scoring from third to home. It probably was. Anyway, cool stat. Hadn't been done since 06, and only seven times since 1930. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. All right, let me get a timeout here. We'll come back. We got a lot more to talk about. You heard some audio. Very interesting audio in that montage, including audio from Mike Tyson, who's weighing in on the Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight. You know when that fight is, Jim Kushlin?
That's about
1 month from today.
I was going to say, we're about a month out, aren't we?
Yeah, today it is August 26th, and Mike Tyson was weighing in on why Conor McGregor is the dumbest guy ever for agreeing to this fight with those terms. He thought it was going to be some kind of a combination of boxing and MMA, and you know what? Mike Tyson's right. It damn well should have been. Conor McGregor is going to get drilled, as I pointed out many, many times. He's going to be outpointed, probably. Probably not knocked out, but will be outpointed very easily by the masterful Floyd Mayweather. It probably could have been a much better and bigger fight, type of fight, had the rules been modified a little bit. So we'll go back to Tyson. The wisdom of Tyson. How about that? The book according to Mike Tyson. We'll have that and reaction to it coming up right here on ESPN 106.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed. Rolling onward. It's 3:43. It's supposed to be a press conference coming up today. We're going to hear what Dan Gilbert has to say, and we'll react to some of that in the second hour of the program. I want to talk a little bit about the fight for a moment or two, if I can, even though it's exactly 1 month away from today. I guess that's a good reason to talk about it as any, but it's Mike Tyson, Cush, and if you can cue that up for me, I want to hear what the former heavyweight champ of the world, once the baddest man on the planet, had to say about Floyd Mayweather, pretty boy Floyd turned Money May, against Conor McGregor, the notorious MMA, Conor McGregor, the mouth that roared, and the mouth that's going to get smacked around a little bit, I think, because Floyd Mayweather is just flat out too good at what he does. This is his life. It's been his livelihood for his entire career. And ain't no way, 49-0, Money May, even though I don't like him, I respect the hell out of his in-ring ability. No way Money May is going to be dumb enough to put himself in a position to get caught by a Conor McGregor punch. Not a chance in hell for that. Floyd Mayweather is going to destroy Conor McGregor, and he's too smart not to. When I say destroy, I think it's going to be outpointing him, not necessarily knocking him out, because Floyd doesn't do that sort of thing. And he might have to take a risk in order to knock him out. I don't think he wants to run that risk. Well, Mike Tyson kind of agrees with that and says Conor McGregor messed up. He had a chance here to negotiate better rules, and if he had, well, then maybe this might be something to watch 1 month from today. Here's the former champ.
McGregor's going to get killed.
Okay.
Is he just boxing?
Okay.
I got mad because I thought they were going to use MMA rules against boxing because that's what it's all about. Can the boxer beat the MMA guy? Conor put his dumb ass in a position where he's going to get knocked out because this guy's been doing this all his life since he was a little baby. And McConnor can't kick or grab and stuff. He's not going to stand much of a chance. McGregor took the biggest sucker rules in the history of boxing.
That's an edited version of the appearance of Mike Tyson on that program. And by the way, the part that you didn't hear is him calling him McConnor.
Right, yeah.
Conor McGregor in Mike Tyson's world is McConnor, which is just par for the course for the man who once said he was going to knock an opponent into Bolivian, which you got to think about for just a second until you realize. He didn't say Bolivia. He said Bolivian, which was not exactly the oblivion that I think he intended. Anyway, he's right. But here's the thing. Conor McGregor cannot box with Floyd Mayweather. He's one of the greatest boxers of all time, and there's no way he's going to let 49-0 legacy get undone by an MMA fighter who's not even a regular boxer. If Conor McGregor and Dana White had gone to Floyd Mayweather's team and said, hey, yo, we want to do this thing, and it's going to make more money than you'll ever imagine, if we do it a little differently than what you're used to, it won't go on your record as a boxing loss if you lose, because let's not make it just boxing. And it won't go on Conor's record as a loss to a non-MMA guy. It won't be straight MMA either. We're going to have a hybrid fight here where we're going to do boxing, but instead of using the 10-ounce boxing gloves, we're going to use or the 4-ounce MMA gloves, which, of course, would hurt a heck of a lot more for a guy who's never been punched by one, like Floyd Mayweather. We'll meet in the middle and use 6-ounce gloves, and we'll have a fight that allows some elements of MMA but predominantly relies upon boxing. In other words, there will be striking allowed on your feet, but no grappling and submission maneuvers to tap out. This way, Conor McGregor loses a significant portion of his arsenal, but he doesn't lose at all. He can punch, Floyd can punch. He can kick, Floyd can kick. And also, once you are struck, there's not going to be any neutral corners. It's you got to defend yourself. If you get struck and tagged and a little bit woozy, he's going to get on, and he's going to start banging, and vice versa. Do you think that would be a better fight, Kush, to have some sort of a hybrid between boxing and MMA? Not full MMA where tap outs and rear naked chokes can happen.
Right.
Because there's no way Floyd Mayweather can learn those sorts of things for a fight like this. But if it's just mostly hands, but a little bit of feet, and also there's just no protection from a knockdown. You can knock somebody down and then knock them out, essentially, without having to go to a neutral corner, that sort of thing. Do you think it would be a better fight? And do you think that Mayweather, if he'd have been guaranteed more money, and I don't know exactly what the split is, I think he's getting probably a little more than twice what McGregor is getting.
That's the number I thought it was
around prize. Twice.
Maybe you say, look, if you agree to these rules, first of all, the pay-per-view you think we would generate from a straight boxing match? Double those pay-per-views. You know how many more people have been waiting to see Rocky Balboa fight Thunderlips for real?
good analogy right there.
Do you know how many people want to see two cross-discipline fighters go at one another with different rules? Something out of their comfort zone? Do you have any idea? If you think, Floyd, that you're going to make 200 mil for this boxing match, let's take that element. First of all, again, it takes away the threat of you losing your 49-0 career because this will not be a sanctioned boxing match.
Right, that's a good point.
You will remain 49-0. This is a straight exhibition, cross-discipline exhibition fight. So your record is intact. You will never have to worry about any of that. Conor McGregor, same thing. Your belts aren't on the line because it's not a full MMA. You don't get to use, submissions and grappling.
Okay.
So, if you think you could have made 200 mil, or you're going to make 200 mil on this fight, if it's a straight boxing match, we can guarantee you 4. I honestly believe it would. I don't know how many people are going to buy it. Did you see earlier today they're going to put this fight up in movie theaters?
No kidding.
Movie theaters are going to be carrying. What's that?
I did not see that. No kidding.
It was announced earlier today that the Mayweather-McGregor fight is going to be carried in theaters around the country.
Wow.
So they're going to pack, you know, pack a bunch of that's just for the boxing match. Can you imagine if this was going to be something people had never seen before? People had never seen anything like this before. An MMA guy using hands and feet against a boxing guy using hands and feet. Elements of both guys' particular excellent skills in play here. And I'm telling you, you would probably double the purse. You'd probably double the take. Here's the story real quick. The highly anticipated fight, yada yada, will be shown in live in movie theaters around the United States August 26th. Dan Rafael of ESPN.com reported the event, which will take place at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, will air in select movie theaters. The broadcast will be identical to the Showtime pay-per-view telecast. Tickets to theater showings will range from $15 to $25 compared to the $99.95 price that the high-definition pay-per-view feed would be in your own home. So, you know, one way to do it is, of course, to invite 10 people over and each pay $10, right? Of the $100, or just go to the theater and see it on the biggest screen possible and pay $15. I'd do that. If I wanted to put money in Floyd Mayweather's pocket, which I don't because he hasn't paid Uncle Sam yet, his taxes.
Right, of course.
I'm not kidding you. I'm still holding that against
him. I know you're not kidding on that, but this whole theater thing is making me think, man, even I might have to consider this now.
Yeah, for $15, $20. You know, it just depends on where you are.
Right.
Hell, that's not bad, really. But like I said, I still will hold that against him. I'm not liquid right now. I got $15 million worth of cars in my garage, but I'm not selling one of them to pay my tax bill. I'm not liquid. Wait till I fight Conor McGregor, then I'll have more money and I can pay my 2015 taxes. And oh, by the way, what about the taxes on this fight? The money he's going to make from this fight, when are you going to pay that in 2020?
I was waiting for at some point on this whole part of it for you to mention that part.
I'm not going to buy. It's the only reason I don't want to do this. I want to watch it for free. I want to figure out a way to watch it for free. I really do. Somebody needs to give me a suggestion on how I can watch this thing for free. And I don't mean illegally. I'm not talking about, of course, can you even do that anymore? Back in the day, back in the 80s, early 80s, late 80s, whenever cable first kind of came into being, people would, like, splice into cable and illegally steal.
Yeah, they did a whole Ancient Simpsons episode on that.
Yeah, they did. Yes, they did. That's exactly right. I'm not talking about stealing it, but just find a way to watch it. I don't wander into a place and watch it where I don't have to pay money to put in.
And funny enough, incidentally, that Simpsons reference I just made, the end of that episode was, of course, watching the big fight.
Of course. Probably a Dredrick Tatum fight.
Yes, it was.
So
where Monty Bird said, if fights lasted less than 50 rounds, we demanded our nickel.
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, anyway, Tyson is right about this, of course, but I don't know if Floyd, you know, unless it was $400 million guaranteed, I don't know if he'd have taken the fight. If you give him that, he's all about TMT, baby. It's the money team. I am all about money. If I can make $400 million for one night's work, and I got to take a few kicks and learn how to give a few kicks, I'm down. Let's do this thing. That's about the only way I think it would have worked, but do you think he'd have taken the fight?
Yeah, I'm leaning more towards yes on that front. The only question I obviously have, and you laid out a couple of them, is how you would, you know, mesh some of the rules. You know, example, you know, you mentioned no taps and submissions, but a little bit of kicks. What would the glove size be? Would it be more the MMA-style glove, or would it be full-on boxing glove? You know, that kind of scenario. We're just spitballing.
Well, like I said,
that.
how about in between? I mean, yeah. You know, the MMA glove is 4 ounces. The boxing glove is 10 ounces. You wear a 4, 6, or I'm sorry, you wear a 6 or a 7 or an 8 ounce glove.
Okay.
You just kind of give everybody. It's not going to be as lightweight of a glove as Connor's used to, but not as heavy as Floyd is used to.
Right.
Everybody is
okay.
Has got to adjust a little bit to it. I think Tyson just kind of. I mean, it's a dream world to have somebody do this. Like I said, to have the Thunderlips Balboa moment, but I would love to have seen that happen. And you know what I really hope, Kush, and I know we're a little short on time here. We got to get moving so we can make room for the press conference. We're going to try to bring some of that to you if we can. But in all seriousness, I hope that this is the beginning of something bigger. And what I mean by that is now that two competing fighting organizations, the UFC and the world of boxing, have gotten together to make this thing happen,
mm-hmm.
Let's not make it the last one, you know? There have been boxers that have gone over to MMA. There have been wrestlers, even phony wrestlers, you know, fake wrestlers like WWE guys who have gone to MMA.
That's right, yeah.
And James Toney, I think, is another boxer who went to MMA. This is not unheard of. And a lot of MMA guys started out as just boxers, like Conor McGregor was an amateur boxer.
Right. That's true.
It's not unheard of. I would like to think that there are more of these kinds of matches that can be made. And I think that MMA has the leverage to making it happen because
yes,
they are
they
the one that's growing, booming, exploding with every pay-per-view. They got a massive one coming up this weekend. Daniel Cormier against Jon Jones. Jon Jones is the only guy to beat Cormier. And Jon Jones, of course, had a whole bunch of trouble, cocaine issues, PED issues, lost his belts because of some PED stuff. Cormier wants to avenge that and take him. This is a massive fight between two of the very best ever. When's the last time you heard boxing say we have two of the very best ever?
It's been a while.
Don't say Pacquiao and Floyd because that fight was 5 years after they were two of the best ever.
Exactly.
It was way too late. This is two guys in their prime. My point is I think boxing, in an effort to stay relevant, would be a little more amenable, you know, boxing promoters to say, hey, let's bring some of these guys together so we can get the money going again.
And I hope that this fight is the beginning of those doors being open because in a twisted way, ever since really MMA, UFC, you know, whatever really started taking off, and we're coming up, what is it, 27? We're coming up on a decade plus ago when they really started, you know, moving on up.
Right.
That you would eventually get to this kind of point. And that it would go from there. And I hope this, like you said, I hope this isn't the only time that these guys do something
yeah.
like this. Not
yeah,
obviously
I hope this
these
is
specific
the start
characters,
of something
but
bigger,
anybody.
Which it can be.
And yes, and it can be, and it needs to be, you know, for all the parties involved. Now,
yeah.
I know the MMA and UFC have become wildly popular, and boxing is on its downswing, but if they can go forward, mesh some rules together, and have kind of a mixed fight, and have those things on cards going forward, whether it's the boxing card or the MMA card, that, in theory, that only increases the brand of both, in theory.
Right. Yeah, I and that's exactly why they would do it, obviously, and that's kind of the purpose. Okay, let me get a time out here, but before we do that, let me remind you of an opportunity to go see the races at MIS, Michigan International Speedway. It's on August 11th, and you could win tickets up for grabs to Friday qualifying, to the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series on Saturday, and then the Pure Michigan 400 on Sunday if you win the grand prize contest in this text or grand prize in this texting contest. To qualify, just text MIS ticket, MIS for Michigan International Speedway ticket, to 64636. If you do that now, you could win. Good luck to you from the Michigan International Speedway and Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Okay, we still have some other things to get into, some baseball stuff, but boy, I do want to hear what Dan Gilbert says about the train wreck that's going on with his franchise now. Derrick Rose is in, Kyrie Irving wants out, LeBron James has ticked at everybody. There's a new general manager. What is going to happen out there? We're going to try to bring you some of that after the top of the hour Sports Center, which comes your way now, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The 3-1 pitch. Swung in and blasted. Deep right center. Away, back and gone. Bradley Zimmer with a grand slam. Oh, did he put a charge into it. Swung on, hammered to deep center field. Zimmer near the wall, leaps, made the catch, crashed into the wall, fell to the track, gets up and shows he hung on. He's done it again. Oh, what a play by Zimmer. And the Indians have a chance for a walk-off win. The pitch to Encarnacion. A swing and a drive to deep left center. Away, back, and gone. A game-winning grand slam to left center for Edwin Encarnacion. And a mobbing at home plate.
He's going to get killed.
Okay.
Is this boxing?
Okay.
I got mad because I thought they were going to use MMA rules against boxing because that's what it's all about. Can the boxer beat the MMA guy? Conor put his dumb ass in a position where he's going to get knocked out because this guy's been doing this all his life since he was a little baby. And McConnor can't kick or grab and stuff. He's not going to stand much of a chance. McGregor took the biggest sucker rules in the history of boxing.
So if LeBron tells you, hey, you get me enough veteran help that we think we got a shot against Golden State, like I'm all in to come back here for multiple years, then that changes it. If you think there's a good chance LeBron leaves, or at least some chance LeBron leaves, which is the operating assumption right now, then the number one priority becomes somewhere in this trade, we got to get a blue chip 22 and under player that can carry us forward into whatever our next era is. Obviously, I mean, they want everything, right? They want the veterans, they want the blue chip, or they want a pick. But, you know, every offer sort of lands somewhere on each of those individual scales. And I think right now, priority number one is that blue chip 22, 23 and under guy.
There are some moments when a professional athlete literally tempts you to go nuclear on them. And I stand here before you today, right in that zone when it comes to LeBron James. Ladies and gentlemen, LeBron James sent out a tweet about me responding to Slam Magazine, talking about not facts, people. Boo, get another source. He's talking about me. He's talking about what I reported. And what I reported was that if LeBron James was in front of Kyrie Irving, I was told, quote, he would be tempted to whoop his ass. That's what was told to me. I did not speculate. I did not put that out there. It was told to me, verbatim. In that manner, he's not going to hit Kyrie. He's not going to get into a fight with Kyrie. It wasn't meant to be taken literally. It was meant to highlight his level of frustration with what he perceives to be something that Kyrie Irving is doing in his eyes, which is to say he believes that Kyrie Irving, who is a big-time talent, and as far as I'm concerned, a superstar in his own right, who is a champion, wants to leave, and that should have been that, rather than Kyrie Irving trying to make his departure about LeBron James because it makes LeBron James look bad, and LeBron James feels betrayed.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two, indeed, is underway. We're on here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader, but our eyes are on a couple of other cities now as well, including to our east, where the defending Eastern Conference champion Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be hosting a press conference here. Owner Dan Gilbert set to address the media, very likely with new GM Toby Altman, as well as, I don't even know who else, Kush, because I don't have a screen in front of me. What are we looking at?
It's and they just started, so it is Kobe Altman and Dan Gilbert right now.
Yeah, Kobe Altman, 34 years old. 34 years old now, tied for the youngest general manager in the National Basketball Association. Brings a wealth of experience. I can't even say it out loud. I can't say it out loud because obviously it is not, and it's a big concern. It was also not the first choice or the second choice or the third choice. It was the dude who was assisting Griffin before, so we just got to move on. He'll be out of a job in probably 2 years or however long his contract is. Anyway, I'm being real negative here, but we want to see what's going on out there, Kush. Dan Gilbert is going to be asked, in addition about his new GM, he's going to be asked, I would imagine, about the Kyrie Irving trade talk and whether or not they intend to grant Kyrie Irving's request. First of all, they have to confirm it. And then whether or not they intend to grant Kyrie Irving's request for a trade, or if he is going to try to sit down with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and work things out. That's part of what we're expecting to hear. And you're going to monitor this now, right, Kush? We're going to monitor the press conference and then perhaps tap in and bring a little bit of that live to you as we can before Dennis Manilov joins us to break it down from his perspective,
right,
coming up at about 4:35.
That's kind of the plan, and I've got it up and running right now. So,
all right, so I'm very interested about that or in that. I saved some of our NBA talk for the second hour today because, for this reason, because that conversation is going on. And while they're having that, Jim, I feel like it's okay for us to talk about this very interesting rumored deal for Kyrie Irving staying in the Eastern Conference. This, according to thebiglead.com, citing a number of sources, that Kyrie Irving could be traded within the East, where he would have to play against LeBron James a couple, three times a year. And it would be with the biggest rival that the Cavaliers face in the East. And that would be dealing Kyrie Irving to the Boston Celtics, who was not on the list, by the way. They were not on the list of what Kyrie said he would like in an ideal situation. But it would be point guard Kyrie Irving going to Boston for point guard Isaiah Thomas, as well as a little bit of do-everything forward Jay Crowder and a number one pick from the Nets in the year 2018, which you would kind of think to be a pretty doggone good pick, given the fact that it's the Nets. That's the, along with the French Draymond. Oh, I forgot. The French Draymond would have to be included in this as well. Gershon Yabusele, if I'm doing that one right.
Close enough.
Close enough?
Yeah, close enough.
For Kyrie Irving. What, again, all of these are just rumors at this particular point in time, and there's everybody's got speculation, but boy, I never ever once thought about trading him to within the Eastern Conference, with the exception of he said New York, which I can't see, and he said he likes Miami.
Yeah.
Which I also cannot see, and I was really, I don't know, indifferent to, because both of them, in my estimation, will not be factors. The Celtics would be a factor, because
yes,
that's expected to be the second-best team in the conference, and who knows if it elevates them to the best team in the conference if a deal like that is made.
Exactly, and that's kind of, and I heard that rumor too, and that's one, and pretty much everybody is at least making calls. I mean, if you're a GM of any other team in the NBA, you have to at least make the obligatory call to a Gilbert and Altman. I mean,
sure,
at bare minimum. But, you know, if I'm the Cavs, that's like that, the Celtics kind of offer or possibility would be my last resort. Because the one thing I wouldn't want to do for this upcoming season is make the one technical true competitor, the Cavs, you know, any kind of stronger. You know, honestly, out of all the rumors, the deal I like, I kind of have been liking the most is if you're going to keep him in the East anyway, is the one with Charlotte. Because I don't know what it is, but I've always been a decent fan of Kemba Walker. And in such a deal, if you're going to send Kyrie to the Hornets, you're getting Kemba Walker back. And I've always liked him. He's a decent player.
Well, he is a decent player. So is Isaiah Thomas, for that matter. He's a big-time scorer as well, so that's an interesting one. You know, Eric Bledsoe is another guy we were talking about dealing out west. So there are a lot of potential deals there, and I'm very interested to see how Dan Gilbert of the Cavaliers and Kobe Altman, who is the new general manager, how they address these things. So, again, kind of keep your eyes on that for me, Jim, and let me know when it's a good time to tap in and see what the questions are and what kind of questions they are getting as we talk about the relationship between LeBron and Kyrie and whether this is repairable. Or as I said yesterday, I think it absolutely is not. I think it's
done. I agree with that.
Yeah, I do. I think it's done. The stuff about LeBron said he'd kick his A, even if he didn't mean it in a literal sense, I believe that anger is probably there. And I'll tell you something else. There are some other big stories on the big lead, which is USA Today's sports website. I find some of these stories very compelling. Some of them are very conspiratorial, you know, conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
But some of my, I don't have a hard time believing some of these conspiracy theories. And here's what I mean. There's one story that's on the big lead today by Jason McIntyre, who was also responsible for the story I was just quoting from on the trade with the Celtics. Headline, LeBron is creating a narrative so when he leaves for the Lakers, he can say everyone abandoned him. Successful general manager David Griffin wasn't retained. It was LeBron's guy. The Cavs tried to get Jimmy Butler and couldn't get Jimmy Butler, and that's LeBron's buddy. Cavs tried to get Paul George, couldn't get Paul George. LeBron wanted that. Cavs couldn't bring Carmelo Anthony in a deal. That's LeBron's buddy. Couldn't give him that. Chauncey Billups, whom LeBron has a great relationship, didn't want to be part of the front office, so you don't have that. And then Kyrie Irving, the best player he's ever played with, and yes, he played with Dwayne Wade, the best player he's ever played with, wants out of town, leaving him behind. 11 months from now, writes Jason, when LeBron leaves the Cavs for the Lakers, or for a mystery team like the 76ers, King James will have plenty to say about how he went back to Cleveland and brought the beleaguered franchise a title, only to have everybody in Cleveland abandon him. From the front office to a trusted teammate to elite trade targets, LeBron had no choice but to leave because nothing was brought to him, or nothing was he wasn't allowed to keep the things that he had. Everybody abandoned him. I got to tell you, nobody spins a yarn quite like LeBron James. Nobody spins a story and changes a narrative quite like him to make himself look good or victimized or martyred, as the case might be, quite the way LeBron James does. And I think there's a little bit to this. Not saying that he necessarily leaked that Kyrie wants out, although there are many sources alleging that he did, because Kyrie asked Dan Gilbert for this trade well over a week ago, and it was just recently announced. It was during our show on Friday, and it got leaked out, and many people saying it's LeBron or LeBron's camp that leaked it. And the reason would be, especially the part about how he wants to get away from LeBron, is it does what? It martyrs LeBron.
Well, there
is the poor innocent guy. Go ahead.
Let me stop you there, because they've gone through the obligatory intros and Dan Gilbert, you know, introducing Kobe Altman. Now they're getting the questions, and the first one up, I'm going to tap into this right now. They're asking about Kyrie.
And I think most of them we have, as we've done with other players in the region, and whether their contract's coming up or not. And there was several scenarios discussed at that time, and I don't feel it's appropriate really get into the details of all those scenarios. And so, you know, I don't know the sources of the report that there was a trade request made. I read it in the media, like some of you reported and some of you read. But we talked about a wide range of possibilities in the future. At that time, we had not signed Kobe yet as our general manager. And there are a few other moves, I believe, that have been made that weren't made at that time. So, you know, these things are fluid. We think that Kyrie Irving is, you know, one of the best guards in the NBA.
All right, that audio is way too low for us to air for you. Apologies for that. We were hoping we could tap in and bring it to you live and see what some of the answers from Dan Gilbert are. But we're not going to be able to handle that for you, because we just can't bring it up. It's just it's a brutal reality of the situation. So what we will do is analyze it after we hear it and talk to Dennis Manilow about it coming up at 4:35, talking about the trade possibilities and also talking about the narratives that are being spun here. I told you about the trolling by both guys in the first hour of the show, talking about Kyrie and LeBron James. There's a lot of trolling going on. Both them kind of, I don't want to say taking stabs at each other, but almost in the media trying to establish a, hey, it's not my fault, I'm a good guy, it's the other guy's the problem, kind of narrative here. And it is irreparable. And I'm very interested to see what Dan Gilbert says about that. Like I said, I feel like there should be an explanation that is forthcoming to the fans. I don't necessarily know what it is going to be, but I really hope that he is able to kind of be honest about who came to him and when and how this story got out, because it'll bring a lot more clarity to the situation as we get into the potential trade prospects. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get an extra time out here. We're going to take one as I tell you about your Charlotte Flyaway contest from Toledo Express Airport and from the Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and ESPN 106.5, the ticket. And then we're going to come back and try to tap into this again. But I want you to think about this tremendous contest available on our website now at 106.5theticket.com. You can register there for a $1,000 gift certificate from American Airlines. That'll get you two round-trip tickets. It's good toward two round-trip tickets, departing Toledo Express, then via Charlotte, North Carolina, and on to the rest of the continental United States, wherever it is you would like to go. It's all brought to you by Toledo Express Airport, the Port Authority, American Airlines, and ESPN 106.5, the tickets. So we're going to try to see if we can tap into this a little bit better in a moment, and we'll come back and bring that to you right here on ESPN 106.5.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, the ticket.
All right, so here's the situation now at 4:25. We'll have Dennis Manilow coming on with us in about 10 minutes or so. We'll have a bottom of the hour Sports Center, and we'll get the update on the Cavs situation from Cleveland. But the Cavaliers, I think, control freak that Dan Gilbert is, they're barring any live feed from being carried by media sites.
Right.
Other than Cavs.com. They want every click going to Cavs.com.
And they're getting their wish. It claims 3,700 right now.
Is that right?
3.7K in the top left corner as I'm seeing.
That's what they want, is everybody going to them so they get the clicks and then thus the ad revenue. It's extraordinarily inappropriate. They have media partners. They should be covered by the local newspaper and the local newspaper's website and all that stuff out there, which we should be able to get a feed from. And instead, Dan Gilbert, being the greedy, narcissistic control freak that he is, and he is, not letting anybody else carry this. And then on the Cavaliers.com feed, well, you heard it when we tried to play it. It couldn't be more quiet. They can't even adjust the level to make it audible so that you can hear it. So it's just ridiculously so cavalier of them. Having said that, here's a couple of updates that we are getting. Dan Gilbert and Kobe Altman have said that the Kyrie Irving trade situation is fluid. That's the word that they're using. His request to be traded has been widely reported by so many different sources, and Gilbert says these things are fluid. We think Kyrie Irving is one of the best guards in the NBA. We value his talent. Altman said roughly the same thing. This is their first press conference together since Altman was hired to address a number of situations in what has been a tumultuous offseason for the three-time defending Eastern Conference champions, and it has been every bit of that. It has been tumultuous, and worst of all for me, it doesn't need to be. So much of this was caused by Dan Gilbert, who has absolutely no value whatsoever, puts no value whatsoever, Jim, in the general manager position, hires them, and then lets their contracts expire or fires them about every 2 years on average since he took over. Nobody lasts more than 5 years. And because of that, he has created a very unstable situation for LeBron James, for Kyrie Irving. Not that Kyrie necessarily would have stayed had David Griffin still been around, but he might not have asked for that trade. Who knows? Because I think Griffin was very good at massaging and managing personalities. But Dan Gilbert has created such an unstable situation there that the three-time defending champions, I mean, are really at a crossroads here where they may end up at the bottom of the playoff teams looking up. And I'm not saying that any team that has LeBron James isn't going to necessarily finish near 500. But when I say bottom, I mean if you were to name the top contenders, you start with the defending champion Warriors. You should go right next to the Cleveland Cavaliers. But if Kyrie Irving is gone, depending on what kind of a trade that they get, you might go right to the Houston Rockets, Chris Paul, James Harden. You might go right to the Oklahoma City Thunder, Russ Westbrook and Paul George. You might go right to a team like the Minnesota Timberwolves. You might go right to, because they improved with Jimmy Butler, you know, the San Antonio Spurs. You might have, you know, of that top tier of teams, they might be at the bottom of that top tier, Jim.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that's part of what this, you know, this whole issue is about, and them calling it, you know, fluid. My take on that is they know what the situation is. They'd like to do something, but at the same time, if somehow it can be patched up and he plays one more season, they could take that. They're trying to be PR style, keeping everything on the table when, you know, quite frankly, I personally, I'm not buying that. This trade has to be made. As I said on these airways when we were talking about this just yesterday, this trade has to be made, and it has to be made before camp starts in late September.
There's no doubt, and I firmly believe it will be. They don't want to get into a situation where they're in season before something like this happens. You talk about throwing off any chemistry that they might have
right
in trying to defend their Eastern Conference championship. You make that change in season without having an opportunity to get used to it. It is just a train wreck waiting to happen. So I firmly believe it will happen in the way that you just described. Okay, a couple of other things. Let's see here. Do we have any other? Yeah, a couple of quick other updates on what's going on out there with that press conference. Dan Gilbert, the owner, says the parting of ways with David Griffin, the GM, had nothing to do with money. No, don't laugh. I think there's some truth to that, Jimmy. You're chuckling because we know that Dan Gilbert has never valued. I mean, we know he was going to try to underpay Chauncey Billups, so maybe that's why you're laughing at it. But
that David is, by Griffin, the way.
David Griffin even said on the way out the door that there are philosophical differences here that they cannot overcome. And it's my belief, and I said this at the time on this show, it's my belief that means that David Griffin perhaps wanted to pull the trigger on a deal, maybe a one-year rental deal with Paul George, and it's something that Dan Gilbert was not going to be for. His feeling that if they brought Paul George here in exchange for Kevin Love, that Paul George only stays for the 1 year, then goes west like he told the Pacers he was going to do. LeBron opts out after 2018 like he is always threatening to do, and now you're left without George, without LeBron, and without Kevin Love, whom you had to trade. And that if that was the mindset of the outgoing GM, Griffin, then Dan Gilbert is right when he says it wasn't about money, it was about philosophy. Griffin is right. It wasn't about money, it was about philosophy. It was about organizational team decisions.
And part of that could be true. I mean, you know, I remember vaguely having a discussion about this on a previous show a while ago where, you know, if you're David Griffin, you know, we're talking like maybe, you know, back during the season or something. If you're David Griffin, your job as GM is to put a winning team with, because you have LeBron, put as much of a winning team out there to truly contend for championships as you can right now. And quite frankly, I think we'd all agree he did a bang-up job of that. Just think of some of the especially mid-season trades he was able to pull off in his couple-year tenure as the Cavs. They changed seasons, especially that very first set of trades back in January of 2015. So that's on the one hand, and we know that on the other hand, Gilbert doesn't want to have to be paying these luxury taxes, which they're in beyond luxury tax hell, as we know, and they're in the repeater. But at the same time, and we speculated this, and I'm fairly certain this is true, he remembers, as we've discussed, last time that LeBron left, what happened to the Cavs. They had the most losses of anybody in the NBA in that four-year span. Yeah. He needs to make sure, okay, if LeBron does bolt me again, I still at least have a playoff second round capable type team out there, at least for the 1 year. I can't go right to we're contending, LeBron leaves, and now we're a 65 loss team. He knows he can't have that happen again.
Obviously, that's the thing you have to avoid at all costs. I'll tell you what, it's bottom of the hour. It's 4:32, so let's get a quick timeout here. We'll check our bottom of the hour sports center. Then we'll come back and talk to Dennis Manilov, who is covering this press conference very closely. We'll see exactly what he has to say about what they have to say as we try to get to the bottom of one of the biggest, really, NBA sideshows involving a superstar that we've seen in quite some time. A splitting up of two all-NBA caliber guys, two all-star teammates who won a title together. This is the biggest kind of story of its kind that we've had since Shaq and Kobe parted ways after winning three straight championships in a battle over the spotlight. Who's number one, who's number two, who's Batman and who's Robin? And Shaq, of course, was forced out of L.A. Not saying that LeBron and Kyrie are exactly the same quality as Shaq and Kobe, who are two all-timers. But in terms of their place in the game today, they're both superstars. And this little breakup over credit, if that's what it is similar to that Lakers story. So we'll get more on that coming up with Manilov right here as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, it's 4:40. Let's check in now. Going out to our East and the home of the three-time defending Eastern Conference champion Cleveland Cavaliers. There's a press conference going on now as Dan Gilbert updates fans and media on all of the strange happenings in this tumultuous offseason for the Cavs. Our friend Dennis Manilov is covering that for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Northeast Ohio Media Group, including Cleveland.com. D-Man, how are you, buddy?
What's up? Earthquake presser is still going, but I can give you what I've heard so far.
Lay it on me, because I do not have access to hear it while I'm talking. Obviously, in doing the show, we do not have the right to carry it. And the Cavs apparently aren't letting anybody else carry it except for Cavs.com. So, lay it on us. The only thing I read, though, so far in terms of an update is that the Kyrie situation has been described as fluid. You can tell us the rest.
Yeah. Well, I've been watching on ESPN News, and they dodged the Kyrie questions as you would expect they would, which to me, the translation is very simple. Yes, Kyrie did ask request a trade. Gilbert acknowledged the meeting, but then he kind of, floated around the specific and didn't actually say that Kyrie requested it. But if you read between his words or between his lines, it's pretty clear that Kyrie requested a trade, and that's where the fluid stuff then subsequently came from. So that is, that's a definite. Windhorse and Wojnarowski sourcing is accurate on that front, that their trade was requested, and they're just not going to go into details because obviously they want to maintain, some degree of leverage. They've tried to pretend like this is not an untenable situation, that Kyrie could play with LeBron going forward, but we all know that's a farce.
Yeah, there's no question about this. There's so many different reports on this, Dennis, a lot of which are just that, the reports from sources, and we don't have, specifics. Do you believe the report LeBron denied yesterday on Twitter that he threatened to kick Kyrie's rear end? Or if you do believe it, do you think it was not a, hey, man, I'm so mad I could kick his butt for real, but it's just one of those things you say? It's like, man, if he's here, I'd beat his ass.
Yeah, that's a great question. As much as I like the King, Bob, I don't pretend to know how he operates. I do know he's a passive-aggressive guy. He likes to deal in subterfuge and and sort of, you know, sleight of hand. You have to figure some cryptic stuff. So I don't know what he was thinking, you know, or what he was doing, whether it was a joke or it wasn't a joke, what's going on there. But yeah, I couldn't really say for sure. I will buy the notion that LeBron was a little bit startled by Kyrie's trade request, but I won't buy the idea that he was blindsided, as in, oh, he learned about it from the media. You know, I gotta believe that, you know, through back channels, through teammates, or even Kyrie himself, that Kyrie might have said, hey, LeBron, I'm gonna do this. And so I don't think there's acrimony to the extent maybe that we think.
The reason I ask is, you know, just about the degree of anger, contentiousness, acrimony, whatever you want to call it, between the two. There's some trolling going on. LeBron was believed to have been trolling Kyrie Irving when he put a little slow jam to a song he was doing on Instagram. Kyrie returned that favor, according to what I saw on TV today, singing LeBron's I'm Coming Home theme song as he's on his way back from China on Instagram. Kyrie and Kyrie's people say LeBron is the one who leaked to the media this story that Kyrie wanted the trade, and it was not the way Kyrie preferred to announce that sort of thing. So it looks like it's pretty severe, the gap between these two guys.
Yeah, and when I said, you know, that maybe the acrimony is not as severe as we think, that probably could summarize what I thought early on. Before some of this trolling, obviously before the Kyrie, yeah. I'm coming home video. But there is, remember this though. Here's what I've learned, Bob, and I think you are going to agree with me on this. From decades of observing the NBA, it's the NBA AU, the NBA AU, and it is a player-driven league. No, granted, no. Owners sign the checks, but the players have incredible power. They love to create storylines for their brands, for their marketing, for whatever. They love this whole, you know, drama that they've been able to create over a 12-month period. As I said to you on one show before, unbelievable how many times Carmelo Anthony has been talked about in his career, and he hasn't won diddly squat, okay? That's how these guys are. They're masters at creating individual storylines within the framework of team. So it wouldn't surprise me if it came out one day that LeBron and Kyrie were just playing us, okay, because of the way the NBA operates. I don't think that's true, but I would never rule that out because of how these guys work. They love to play the media. They love to mess around. So maybe this Kyrie, I'm coming home, was an inside joke with LeBron. Hey, we'll you know, we'll really stoke the fires here. I doubt it, but it's possible.
There's three prospects. I thought they phrased it very well this morning on First Take. Dennis Maniloff joining us, breaking down the Cavaliers press conference and the situation involving Kyrie Irving's demand for a trade. There's three prospects that they have here. Number one possibility they could do is keep Kyrie and say, you know what, we have no obligation to trade you at all. We expect you in training camp. Go to work. Number two is to trade him for somebody who can come back right now and replace him, maybe not in the same exact position, but who can help the Cavaliers get right back to the finals anyway while LeBron is still a Cavalier, win right now. Or trade him for pieces that will help this team stay together better, not stay together, stay better longer in the long run in the event that LeBron does leave, so that they have some young 23 years of age or less pieces so that they don't just fall to garbage. What is most likely of those three scenarios in your opinion?
I think the last one, I think it's a hedge trade where you trade for veteran help, but you also have an eye on the future and try to acquire at least one chip to help in the post-LeBron rebuild. But in my opinion, they have to go all in as long as LeBron is here. And that doesn't mean that you can't try to acquire a chip. It just means that when you do make the trade for Kyrie, there's got to be, you know, that it's going to be emphasis on veteran help, but there's also going to be hopefully a future pick involved or something, because they really have no cupboard for the future. And I think LeBron would understand, hey, you know, we're trying to win now while I'm here, but they also have a right to try to acquire some kind of an asset going forward. But if you go with, you know, Kyrie for nothing but veterans and guys who can potentially bolt, I don't think that's in the interest of the franchise.
Couple of names that have surfaced in the last 24 hours, D-Man, and we know these are just rumors and maybe there's nothing to them at all, but you get some people reporting some things. USA Today reporter says this, another NBA reporter says that about possible trade pieces. So I'm just going to throw it at you. The team that is considered to be closest to the Cavaliers in the East as currently constructed with Kyrie as a Cav is the Boston Celtics, obviously. The word from USA Today is that there would be a potential deal between the Cavaliers and those Celtics. Kyrie going to Boston, Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, and the Nets first-round pick in 2018 going to Cleveland. First, I guess you could just speculate on the legitimacy of such a possibility, but then secondly, if it did happen, what do you make of it?
I doubt it. I wouldn't necessarily be in favor of it. Just because of the players involved. But I do want to jump on a little bit of a tangent here, Bob, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
I've heard people say, well, the Cavs, you know, they have plenty of time to make this decision. They shouldn't feel boxed in, even though, you know, some of the leverage seemingly has been taken away because now teams know that they want to trade Kyrie.
Right.
I say what you do is you set a deadline for, let's just throw out, I don't know, what is today, Wednesday?
Yeah.
Set a deadline for next Wednesday and say, send a message out to every NBA team. Put together your best possible trade package for Kyrie Irving. And the deadline is next Wednesday at noon. And we will sort through all those offers and we'll get back to you. Okay? I don't think you have to sit there and go, well, we've got a couple of months, we can, you know, sit and, you know, and debate and this and that. No, set a hard deadline for teams to meet. Say, we want you to put together the best package you think will land Kyrie. We'll look them over, and if we like one or two of them, we'll get back to you. If we don't, we won't. You know, that's one way, that's the way I would go about it. But
well,
I think
what,
the Cavs
what I would
are...
say in response, Dennis, to that before you continue is... I don't know that that's ever been done, where it's essentially an auction. Here's our guy. We got him up on the block, and give us your best pieces, and hey, you got him. After a certain period, I've never seen that done before. I don't think it could be done, quite personally, because I think the teams are not going to say, here's the best package we have, without talking to them about, hey, who else can you send over in addition to Kyrie? Will you throw in Iman Shumpert? Will you throw in somebody else to make dollars work or whatever? So I think there has to be one-on-one negotiations and not just to send us your best thing. Second of all, if somebody was willing to do that, are you promising them that you're going to make that deal? Ship him as of next Wednesday or whatever the case might be. We'll pick the best one regardless?
No. What I said was,
okay,
you send us your best package proposal. We'll sift through them. We'll look at them. And if we like one, we'll get back to you. And then you would continue the negotiation. Yeah, this is not one of those one-offs where you just say, okay, whatever you guys put. No. That's
almost
not like
Price is Right. Here's the auction. You know,
no,
set them up for auction,
no, no.
And whoever's the closest gets it. well, there's got to be more to it than that. So.
No, the reason I'm throwing that out is I think it would make sense from this standpoint. It would speed up the timeline without having you lose your leverage. Because what you can do is if you get what other teams are willing to part with, and then you know, okay, this team is not in the mix, this team won't be in the mix, this team will be in the mix, this team will be in the mix. And once you get those trade proposals, then you sort through them, you figure out, okay, which ones are most viable for us, which ones do we like the most, and then we'll get back to you and start talking, you know, real turkey. I agree with you. It's probably not going to be done that way. But the only reason I threw that out there is because I don't think you have to wait until September to do something like this. I don't I think you can make this move fairly quickly without it being a panic move if you tell every team, okay, we want your proposals and we want them on, you know, X date.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. It does give you a little bit of strength and leverage. There's no question about that. And they're not in a rush. I don't think you can say you have a ton of time, but I don't think you can say they're in a rush either, because he's not Paul George on a one-year deal. He's got a two-year deal. So there's at least, you know, a little bit of leverage saying, hey, you're going to get this All-Stars 25 points a game and 6.5 assists a game for two solid seasons minimum here. It does give you at least a little bit of leverage no matter when you move him, and provided it is before training camp at some point in time. Last thing, Dennis, the D. Rose acquisition, what do you make of it? Just a one-year stopgap, see what happens kind of a thing, or do you think he actually has something to contribute?
Well, I think he has something to contribute, and it's one of the more fascinating acquisitions in the entire NBA because of when it happened, who it is, and what it means. We didn't understand why Derrick Rose was mentioned, why he was linked to the Cavs all of a sudden when he hadn't been linked at all. Now we know, because, you know, he was linked to the Cavs before we knew about the Kyrie stuff. Now we know what the Cavs were doing. They were hedging because they recognized they needed a legitimate point guard, and they weren't going to turn to Jose Calderon when they flipped Irving. And the other thing, too, is it gives the Cavaliers a little bit of, you would say, leeway, a little bit of latitude, because they can potentially trade for pieces that are not automatically a point guard. You would think they're getting a point guard back in return for Kyrie, but now I don't think they have to because they have Derrick Rose. Now, the cynic says, well, how can you count on Derrick Rose?
Right.
He's the injury prone. I agree. I totally agree with you there. Derrick Rose is a flyer, but he's a guy that, for a stopgap one-season deal, I think they're counting on. And Bob, if you're Derrick Rose and you knew about the Kyrie situation and you knew that the Cavs needed a named point guard just in case they couldn't get a point guard back for Kyrie, wouldn't you not agree to sign with the Cavs unless they basically promised you the starting job? I mean, why would you sign for the minimum for $2.1 million to potentially be on the bench when you're Derrick Rose? Why would you do that?
So, well, not only that,
to give that argument some credence too, Dennis, word out of the Rose camp, if you will, maybe not the Rose camp, but people close to him say that's the reason he didn't go ahead and go with the Lakers, because they wanted him to come off of the bench and be behind Lonzo Ball and just get a very, very small number of minutes guaranteed to him, or not even guaranteed to him every night. So, yeah, I would think if he's coming to Cleveland for $2.1 million, it's to play and to play a lot.
Right, and I know the Cavs can't promise. I mean, they can't sit across from Derrick Rose and say, guarantee you're starting, all right? But my sense is that in the negotiations, the Cavs say, look, it's pretty clear that we're going to move Kyrie, and it's very possible that we don't land a stud point guard in return, so we are going to turn to you as our main guy at the point for 2017-18. Short of guaranteeing it, but coming, 99% and 4,400% close to that, I think that's what happened in the Rose negotiations, and therefore that leads me to believe, backed up again by today, that the Cavs are going to move up.
Yeah, as we say those things, by the way, D-Man, I'm looking at some of the updates, live tweets of the press conference that you were just talking about. Cavs Kobe Altman just labeled Derrick Rose and, quote, off the bench backup point guard, end quote, who is ready for that.
So, well, I didn't hear that part.
Literally, that it just happened. I mean, this literally updated just three seconds ago, so you wouldn't have heard it because you're busy talking to me, which, by the way, Dennis,
well,
I really appreciate.
So much for that.
Yeah, we get right on. And now we really got to see what's going on there, because I think you made very sound logic, or you used very sound logic in making those conclusions, but that's what we have. Dennis, thanks for pulling yourself away from the pressure to talk to us, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, bud.
You got it. All right, that's it. Music is playing. You know what that means. Drive Time is coming up next right here on the Ticket. Mr. Miller is out for the day. Mr. Cushlin will be in, so stick around. You'll probably have more on this as well as the rest of the evening's news. Drive Time coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.